This is the Dr. Duke Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Dr. Duke Show. I'm Dr. Duke, and I'm joined today by our good friend, Hal Shurtleff. Hal, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. And how are you?
Good. And if my audience isn't really familiar yet with Hal, I want you to know him. He's done a wonderful thing, a number of wonderful things. He has a fantastic summer camp for kids that we could not recommend more. It's Camp Constitution. We're going to talk about that. You had a stunning victory at the Supreme Court that would allow you, against the city of Boston, to fly the Christian flag. You got that done on public property. Really amazing. Was it 9-0, I think the justices agreed that you had the right to do that? Start real quick about that, then we'll talk about the camp.
Sure. Well, the case was Shurtleff v. Boston, and I used to be a resident of Boston. I lived there most of my life. We are up in New Hampshire now since of 2020. But I wanted to fly the Christian flag to celebrate Boston's rich Christian history and the U.S. Constitution back in 17. And the city denied the permit. Now, the city had a program where civic organizations and even private individuals could fly a flag to have a ceremony and fly various flags. They flew flags of different countries, including communist China and communist Vietnam. Of course, they flew the LGBTQ flags and all that sort of thing. And flags like Israel and Ireland and Spain, I think Portugal. And one year we actually flew the Gadsden flag. I think that was in 14 or 15. We didn't have any problem with that. That's the flag that has it's a yellow flag with the Don't Tread on Me rattlesnake. But when I wanted to fly the Christian flag, it took a while getting back to me. I thought, what's going on here? And they got back to me within about a month after I applied. It was early September of 17. And they said, separation of church and state. That's when I knew I had a case. I said, oh, I got a case here. And a friend of mine, Lynn Roberts of the Second Amendment Sisters, said, Hal, get a hold of Liberty Counsel. And I did that night. She told me to, and they got back to me the very next day. They said, we want to take your case. And take it they did. And it went all the way to Supreme Court. It took almost 5 years, but we eventually were allowed to fly our flag. We had a wonderful ceremony in early August. To learn more about the case, lc.org/flag. It goes to all the briefs, the briefs in our favor or against us. And as this case was building up, we got so much media attention. Even the ACLU came out with a brief on our behalf, believe it or not, and the Justice Department. And that's what Reverend Kraft said. He said, Hallie, you know God was on our side with this one. There's no way you would ever get any support from these two entities. We also had, I think, 12 attorney generals on our side. We had Notre Dame Law School. We had some American Legion. There was a church in Brooklyn that I forget it was called Tabernacle something or other. And Mike Pence's group. And there was Liberty First and a few others. So all together, we had about 19. And the other side had about 9 against us, including the usual suspects, you know, Freedom From Religion and some left-wing Jewish groups and a Sikh group. You know, it was really interesting, but we prevailed. And I think it's more than just flying a flag, but it set a precedent. There was something called, back in 71 or 72, there was something called the Lemon versus Kurtzman. It was a case concerning an atheist in Pennsylvania that took exception for Pennsylvania and Rhode Island. There were two states that were, some of the tax money was going to parochial schools for specific purposes, and I don't recall the exact case. But in the wake of that, a lot of these town officials and city officials adopted something called the Lemon Test. Not the Lemon Law when it comes to bad cars, but the Lemon Test. And atheist groups would send a letter about, you better not let people say God bless you or bring in candy canes or bring in Bibles or Ten Commandments statues. So they were really afraid to deal with it, afraid of being sued. So they just kind of complied with it as time went on. But our case, according to our attorneys and other attorneys, people who are legal scholars, said that our case put to rest the Lemon Test. I like that little rhyme. And then a few months, our case was decided May 2nd of 22. Then the Kennedy case, the football coach, I think it was Washington State, and they won their case 6-3, and they cited our case. So these two cases, you know, the notion that you can't have any religious expression in the public arena is wrong. It always was wrong. and these two decisions. So what we're seeing is that around the country, it seems like every week there's a town or a city or a county saying no more third-party flags, just the U.S. flag, state flag, POW flag, et cetera. So a lot of these left-wing groups aren't allowed to fly their flags, since they're not allowing anyone to fly their flags. And in other cases, they're allowing people to fly pro-life flags and Christian flags. We had a Christian flag raising in Nashville, New Hampshire on Easter, right in front of City Hall. And I'm seeing this around the country. Sometimes the strategy is, we don't want to see certain flags flying, so we'll petition to see if they'll fly a Christian flag. And then, oh no, we don't want any lawsuits. And they'll just say, okay, no more flags. And they point to our case. There's even a lawsuit in Colorado. I think it was an eighth grade boy brought in a straight pride flag and he wanted to fly it. And the teacher said, oh, we can't fly this. And they were flying rainbow flags. So they hired a lawyer and they're suing the school for $3 million and they cited our case. I don't think I'm going to get a percentage of that $3 million if they win, unfortunately. But I'm delighted that that they were using this as a benchmark and a precedent.
Hal, it is this kind of commitment to the Constitution and getting constitutional justice that segues so beautifully with Camp Constitution. Tell people what it is, how they can enroll for it. I want to tell you, at Freedom Project, our school, we are in the process of setting this up. We want our Freedom Project kids to know about you. We want, hopefully, many of our families will send your kids to this camp. Talk about it as you can. Let us know what's going on with Camp Constitution.
Yes, we're a New Hampshire-based charitable trust, and we started our first camp in 2009, and we've grown every year. So our mission has advanced since just that first little camp of 65 people. But our most important project of the year is our week-long, and I say a family camp because it's not just for children or teenagers, but it's for whole families. We even have a lot of unaccompanied adults that like to participate. And so it runs from July 14th to the 19th at the Singing Hills Christian Camp in Plainfield, New Hampshire. We don't own the facility. We just lease it for the week, and they're great people. So if you want to see what it looks like, you go to singinghills.com or .org, and you'll be able to see this beautiful facility. It's about an hour north and west of Concord, New Hampshire, not too far from the Vermont border. And again, it runs from Sunday, July 14th to the 19th, Friday morning. And we tell people that if a lot of people that drive, some people who fly, we pick you up at airports and train stations and bus stations and bring you back if necessary. And we actually already have, we're about half full already, which is unusual for this early in the year. But thanks to Professor Willie Soon being on the Tucker Carlson Show, we got a lot of new families and new campers. But we have a typical day starts off with a 6:30 optional run or swim or both, and then we have flag raising, morning devotions. We teach the campers how to raise the flag, how to lower the flag with, the proper way of folding it and all that. And then we have breakfast, and we have three classes for the older teenagers and adults. We have three classes, and then we have some of the world's top-notch instructors. I mentioned Professor Willie Soon. You might be familiar with a somewhat obscure guy by the name of Alex Newman. You know a little bit about that fellow? He's been coming. I'm kidding. He's a very well-known person, and he's been attending since with his whole family since 2020. And almost like, oh, this is priority. We're going to camp. Everything else is secondary. So we really enjoy their participation. Pastor David Whitney of the Institute on the Constitution has been coming to camp since 2020. He's a phenomenal instructor. Of course, Reverend Stevie Kraft, he's our camp chaplain, and his expertise is exposing what he calls crazy racist trash, CRT. He does a few classes, and he does one on America's Godly Heritage. We have Catherine White, who's a Lexington, Massachusetts accountant, but she's also a legal, or I should say, a constitutional scholar, and she teaches a few classes. And we have a couple of guest instructors. One of them was in the movie The Unplanned, the Abby Johnson story. She played the abortion nurse in the movie. And she was at our ladies retreat last year, and she's coming back to be a speaker at our camp this year. And Tucker Carlson has said he plans to be there too. So we haven't got official confirmation, and he has a place not too far from our camp. So we're looking forward to. The only thing is we have a small pond. It's sort of a man-made spring-fed pond, and it's not great for fishing. So we'll have to find another lake for him nearby, because I know he's quite the fisherman.
Well, you know, it's wonderful. I mean, and it should Tucker show up. I know you've been in touch with him. That'd be fantastic. So let people know, how much does it cost? What are the dates again? And where can they go to actually enroll in your program?
Yeah, so the dates are Sunday afternoon, July 14th to Friday morning, the 19th of July. So 13 and older, it's 300. And then 12 and under, it's 200. And 3 and under with, of course, parents are free. Let me also mention that we have a program for the youngsters from the 5 to 11-year-olds. We have special, we call it Patriot Camp. And afternoon activities, we have martial arts, we have self-defense, we have other, some of the instructors will give optional classes. We call them workshops, but they're really just optional classes. Field trips, swimming, we have the pond I mentioned. We also have an above-ground pool. We have basketball, volleyball. Chess tournaments, even a gaga pit. Now, you may not know what a gaga pit is, but I bet you all your listeners 20 years and under would know exactly what it is. It has nothing to do with Lady Gaga, by the way. And it's a full week. We have campfire every night where we sing. We don't allow rock music, and we want people to communicate, but we don't allow them to walk around with cell phones all day. So they either turn them into their counselors or to the parents. So they're not texting during class. So in other words, tune out a little bit and pay attention to what's going on. And some people we have about 50% new people every year, 50% return. And a few youngsters that might be, oh, my parents may become, I didn't want to be here. Well, in a day or two, they really get into it. And then by Friday or they're crying, they want to stay, you know. Well, it's over so soon. They really enjoy it. Can't wait to come back the following year.
I can testify. I've been there with you, Hal. It's a wonderful, idyllic place. The accommodations, the company, the teachers, it's first rate. So please consider that. And we've got a couple of minutes left. I would like you to talk about your recent book. On top of everything else, you've produced a book on a very important topic. Go ahead, Alex.
Go ahead, Hal. I should have grabbed a copy of it here. Anyway, so back in 2018, I had Reverend Stevie Kraft. At that time, he was living in New Jersey. And I asked him if he would come with me to Milton, which is just outside of Boston, across the street from the former home of Dr. Clarence Gamble. Gamble was a colleague of Margaret Sanger. He was the heir to the Procter & Gamble fortune. And his expertise was the spermicides and the abortion pill. And he was also a eugenicist. She wrote this infamous letter dated December 10th, 1939. And the address, you know, it was addressed to Dr. Gamble. And I was familiar with the address of the neighborhood. And I didn't live too, I grew up nearby. And so we went across the street. We did a video and we read the letter. And as I'm videotaping and making commentary with Rev, and by the way, in this letter, and you can find the letter, of course, on our website, I had the book itself. We have it as a free download, campconstitution.net, and you see downloads, and we have it on. We sell it for $10. It's a minimal cost. So as I was, doing the video, it just occurred to me that Bush, H.W. Bush, was born about maybe 8 or 9 doors away from where Gamble lived. And Prescott Bush, he would be the grandfather of W. Bush, was where they were living. He was Planned Parenthood's first treasurer. So I thought there must have been a treasure trove of very revealing correspondence between Gamble and Bush about their racist eugenicist movement. So it took me about a year. I finally got, it was early January of 2020 before the lockdown. And ironically, H.W. died the same day we made that video. And the house that Bush lived in is not a museum. It's a private residence where he was born. It's a private residence. There's a little marker there. So I got a chance to look. I couldn't find any correspondence between Sanger, between Gamble and Bush, but I found the correspondence between Sanger and Gamble. And most of it was published here. Most of it I thought was important. And it was fascinating reading because it just shows you how really evil these people are. These letters, for example, that infamous Negro Project letter, Sanger goes on to say that we don't want word to get out that we wish to exterminate the Negroes, and the colored minister, and I'm paraphrasing somewhat, will be able to calm anybody, any of the more rebellion members. So her defenders will say, oh no, she didn't, you misconstrue that. She really didn't want to exterminate the Negroes. He just wanted to control their births. But actually, in some of her early writings, she goes talks about defective weeds and eliminating certain people. And so I don't think she had a benevolent attitude towards the blacks. And also, who funded this Negro project? Well, a lot of there's been a lot of great books exposing that, but I've never found out. But I found out through my research, a man named Albert Lasker. Now, if you're in the advertisement world and you have a history of advertisement, he would be in the Hall of Fame. He was the one, with a few others, he's the one that made smoking cigarettes for women popular. And Lasker married a woman, Mary, who was a colleague of Sanger. In fact, she ran an abortion a clinic in New York. And she was married to a young an art dealer who had a very wealthy. She divorced him and married Lasker. Lasker went on to found the Lasker Foundation, which still exists today. And if you go onto their website, they have nothing but high praise for their founders. So before I published a little book here, I asked, do you have a statement on the racist roots of your founders? And they never got back to me. I sent several emails. So any of your viewers, I would say, go to the Lasker Foundation and ask that question. You know, this man funded, and he gave at least $20,000, which would be about $500,000 today. And what they were doing with that money is it was setting up these birth control clinics in black communities in the South. And of course, they were always giving feedback back to, and the letters, oh, Mr. Lasker is very happy about the results, et cetera, et cetera. Then I discovered something called the Puerto Rican Project. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with that. I have a lot of pro-life friends who have been active in the movement for many, many years. And I asked them, have you heard of the Puerto Rican Project? They said, no. Well, the Puerto Rican Project was where about 1,500 Puerto Rican women in Puerto Rico back in the 50s were used as guinea pigs to test the birth control pill. And Dr. John Rock, he was a Brookline, Massachusetts doctor, and Gamble, Clarence Gamble, they were really instrumental in that. And the last letter that I found was a letter that Gamble sent the three ladies that were physically on the site. And it said, dear collaborators, he was giddy, you know, that they got the results and the FDA approved the pill the following year. They never compensated the families of the women who died. There were at least several deaths. There were a lot of people who got sick from it. Not a dime. And now if you go on to Wikipedia and you put in the Puerto Rican Project, it will show up. It will tell you a little bit about it. But if you didn't know it existed, you would never have found that. And then it was fascinating. Sanger, he had Nazis, Klansmen, and communists all working together. W.E.B. Du Bois, we all know, most of us know, he was the only black founder of what became the NAACP. In 1932, Sanger set up the National Negro Advisory Council to, you know, basically to get buy-in from the blacks to these black, you know, elitists to promote birth control in the black community. And I have a quote that came out of Sanger's birth control review by W.E.B. Du Bois. It's in the book. I'm not going to read it. I can't recite it verbatim, but basically, if you and I wrote this, we would be labeled, rightfully so, as evil racist, white supremacist. He was talking about the blacks with big families are basically secondary people, and they don't, you know, they're not capable. They're not very intelligent, not capable of raising children properly. And there was a disciple of Sanger's, which this is going to, a lot of people don't want to hear this, but I learned about this many years ago. 1966, the first annual Margaret Sanger Award was given out. There were two recipients. One of them was Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson was a big supporter because, you know, he had a racist background. The other one was Dr. Martin Luther King. And I have a copy of the speech that was delivered at the first annual Margaret Sanger Award. And these awards were given out up until 2015. Hillary Clinton was one of the recipients. I think it was 2010 or so. But as Sanger became a little more controversial, as her racist roots were being exposed, there was some, okay, we better back down a little bit. But she also had Dr. Ernest Rudin, who was the Nazi in charge of the forced sterilization program in Germany. And most of in fact, it was very fascinating. Most of the legislation that was passed in Germany was modeled on legislation in the United States. There were about 30 states that had forced sterilization programs from about 1908 to about up until the early 70s. And of course, that famous case, Buck versus Bell, where this woman in Virginia was, and she wasn't even in what they would call an imbecile and so forth. So, and I'm doing more research on the, as you know, it's one thing leads to another, you know, and then, and the eugenics became an embarrassment after World War II, after the Nazis were deposed. And this guy Rudin escaped Nuremberg because he had so many close connections to the United States and to England that they wouldn't dare bring him up on trial because they would expose the whole rotten lot of people. And there was another fellow that was a very close associate of Sanger, Winthrop Stoddard. He also was from Brookline, Massachusetts, and he was a Klansman, and he was a eugenicist and a racist. He wrote a book, I forget the name of the book offhand, but it was and he actually met Adolf Hitler. You know, so these people all worked for it. So you had black communists and you had white neo-Nazis, not neo-Nazis, but Nazis, all working for the same cause. You know, it's fascinating.
Wow. Hal, I got to tell you, it's fascinating stuff. But ladies and gentlemen, you are an activist. You are a director of Camp Constitution. You're an author. So much that you got going on. Again, I want to, as we wind down here, to just let people know that they need to check out Camp Constitution on the internet. It's now the time to get set up for that. And I wish you the best. We'll have you on again, Hal, at a very short
so
time.
Much.
Appreciate the information. Thank you.
All right. Okay. God bless.